It's that time on the radio. We have a conversation, I think, really, with Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. Hi there, Bill.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Now, quite often we have to check where we are resident because the tax rules, reforms, they're changing a lot. And yeah. I suppose, really, taxing is you have to sort out where you're going to be paying your tax. Now, how can you do about that if you're concerned, if perhaps you're spending time both in the UK and on the continent?
Yeah, we discussed this last week, or was it, or maybe the week before, where I mentioned at the end of our discussion that individuals who do frequently return to the UK, and that applies to lots of long-term committed expatriates, need to be aware that they need to stay well within the confines of the statutory residence test. Now, that is, it simplified the definition of what is a non-resident of the UK, but it's still fairly complex in its understanding, and I think you just need to be certain that you're not breaching the terms of the statutory residence test, because, as I said many times in the past, the ignorance of what you're required to do or not to do isn't an excuse when they come to ask you the questions.
Yeah, so what you're saying really, between the lines, Bill, that a tax resident is more complex than people really believe.
Yeah, I think, you know, over dinner parties, I've, you and I had to go back 30 years or so in these discussions, and I've been hawking my wares around Spain for even longer than that, and France and Portugal. And the truth is that I've attended lots of functions where there seem to be, and I mean no disrespect to anybody here, but there seem to be lots of barrack room lawyers out there who will tell you what the non-residence rules are, and they'll be talking about, well, don't worry if you only come for 5 or 6 months, no one really knows, and if you do 3 months now and 6 months later, who's to know? Well, the answer is they do know, and it's fairly simple. You know, the rules are complex. Now, they're not made complex for the sake of being complex, they're made complex because they have to cover a whole gamut of different residential situations, and what you've got to try and tie in to your consideration of residence is, what do you need to do to ensure you're definitely, positively a non-resident of the UK, if that's what you want to do, and at the same time to make sure that you understand where you are resident as a consequence of giving up your UK residence, and as a consequence of finding a new resident status, to be sure that you've got all of your ducks lined up in a row so that you don't breach the regulations, the rules, the tax consequences of your new country of residence. So yeah, it is more complicated than people think. It's not the simple, well, if you spend less than 6 months you're fine. That just isn't the only check and balance in determining where you're resident.
Okay, well, let's start then by looking at the UK tax resident rules. How does this new UK statutory resident test work?
Well, it just to go back a stage, before the statutory residence test, which has only been in place for a few years, it was non-residence determined, if you like, by reference to a guidance book called IR20, issued by, at that time, the Inland Revenue. And many of us in the tax services industry, in the investment business world, we all use that guidance book to try and help us understand what you had to do to become a non-resident, because it wasn't defined in statute. And there was some, there was one particular horrendous case where the man met all of the terms set down in this guidance note, but nonetheless he was challenged by the revenue at a point in time when they thought he was abusing the system. They called it selecting against the revenue, and the revenue won that case. And as a consequence of that, this new statutory residence test has evolved. It went out to investigation amongst the tax professionals, and everyone came up with their comments, and eventually they set the statutory residence down. There's a number of tests, and you need to go through them in sequence, as it were. There's an automatic overseas test, it's called. There's an automatic residence test, as it's called. And there's a final check called the sufficient ties test, where it will determine how many ties you have in the UK, family, your work, accommodation, and how many days you spend there. And taking those three stages, now it's much, much more simple to be certain that you have acquired non-residents of the UK. Without going through that test, you really can't be 100% certain that you've met all the requirements. And so, if you want any advice on the statutory residence test, there is A sort of printed fact sheet that Blevins Franks has produced. And, you know, if you were to contact any one of our offices, which you can find on the web, they'd be happy to give you that solid information about what you need to do to become a non-resident of the UK under the test.
So here in Spain, Bill, let's look at the Spanish rules now. What taxes are you liable if you are a resident in Spain?
If you're a resident of Spain, you are effectively liable for all of the taxes that are applied to indigenous national Spaniards. If you're a resident of Spain, you become liable for income tax, or capital gains tax, and wealth taxes on your worldwide assets. You're liable to Spanish succession tax, which is much the same as inheritance tax. You're also liable to gift tax, and those two elements, succession and gift tax, are significantly different in the way they're applied to UK inheritance tax. And that is, all of those are in addition to all the other incidental tax liabilities, such as IVA and other local taxes. And so I think if you are intending to remain a resident of Spain for an extended period of time, indefinitely, the sooner you get down to arranging your affairs in a manner in which you're 101% certain you aren't breaching any of the tax codes in either Spain or the UK, then the sooner you can get down to ensuring that your planning takes into account methods by which you can reduce your tax liability. Because there is no point. I mean, the tax regime of Spain is significantly more generous in tax planning terms than the UK tax regime right now. That may change in the future, of course. But what we have here is a situation where the taxing statutes are set up by lawyers for the government, under the government's instructions, and it's down to the individual to make sure they meet the law of that applies to whatever tax we're talking about, income or capital gains tax. It's down to the individual as a taxpayer to set their affairs up in such a way so that they are paying what is due, but they're not paying an excessive amount. I think there was a maxim in a court case in the UK, I have to say, a long time ago, when the presiding judge said, no man is under any obligation to place his affairs in such a manner that will allow the revenue to put the largest possible shovel into his stores. And the image, therefore, is that it's down to the individual to make sure that you've carried out your planning in a way in which you meet the law, and you have, as a function of the way you set it up, mitigated against unnecessary tax.
Yeah. So what are the criteria for being a tax resident in Spain?
Again, as I mentioned earlier, that is fairly complex, you know. If you spend more than 182 days in Spain in a calendar year, by the 130 day of residence in Spain, you will de facto become a resident for all tax purposes in Spain, even if you're just one day over the six-month limit. And the simple fact is that it's not a continuous target. It doesn't matter whether you come for 2 months in January, February to avoid the winter weather in the UK, and you come for a couple of months in the summer, and then you come for a couple of months towards the end of the year. If you exceed 183 days cumulatively in a 12-month period, you are de facto a tax resident of Spain.
So what happens then, Bill, with the strange situation that you meet the Spanish rules to be resident here, but also the UK rules to be resident there?
It happens to a lot of people more than you would imagine. A lot of people have chosen to live in Spain, spend, in a sense, more than 6 months of the year in Spain, but spend and have income arising in the UK and business interests in the UK, and the balance of the time they spend there forces them into a situation where they're outside of the statutory residence test for non-resident status, and yet so therefore liable for tax in the UK, and at the same time they've trespassed over the threshold for a variety of reasons. You don't have to be there 183 days. There are other reasons Spanish can deem you to be a resident. And there are a considerable number of people who fall into the trap of becoming tax resident in both places. And the simple fact is that you then have to go to the double tax treaty, the one between Spain and the UK, and again through a series of checks and balances within the terms of that treaty to determine where you are liable for tax. And it may be that you do pay tax in both jurisdictions. That is an unfortunate position to be in, because I can assure you that you always end up paying a lot more than you would have done had you planned your affairs to make sure that you were resident in one place or the other, and therefore liable for tax in one place or the other, because the tax planning that you need to put into place isn't going to be the same if you are a UK resident to that it might be necessary to deal with if you were a Spanish resident. And so therefore, it's important to make sure that you know exactly where you're resident.
I suppose people get this wrong on occasions, and I suppose it's more important now because the countries are automatically exchanging information under the Common Reporting Standard.
Yeah, the CRS, the Common Reporting Standard as it's known, is probably the most voracious. And if you don't mind me saying so, already it's become a tremendously effective piece of cooperation within legislation, whereby the banks and other institutions in which you may have assets, you may have bank accounts, you may have a trust, they're now under a statutory obligation to transfer information automatically to the tax authority of the country you live in. Anyone listening to this programme will know that if you want to open a bank account these days, if you want to set up a new investment portfolio, you need to provide copies of your passport, utility bills. There's no hiding place, in a sense, Howard. And as a consequence, the Common Reporting Standard has now got in excess of 100 participants of most of the major economies of the world, and there are more people queuing up, in a sense, to join the Common Reporting Standard, because unless they impose this standard within their own economy, they're going to find themselves boycotted by the major economies. And the simple fact is that you don't have to do anything. You just have to sit still and hopefully that no one will report something to your tax authority that you have overlooked or forgotten or intentionally not declared. It's worthwhile, as I say, sitting down and talking to an independent financial advisor right now, because the Common Reporting Standard has proved to be effective so far. The reporting has already started. There are investigations, I know, that are going on as a consequence of reports that have been made by one tax authority to another, or by a financial institution to your residential tax authority. And the circumstances are such that you need to make sure that you don't, whatever comes in as a report on your affairs, and that will be reported automatically, that it stacks up with what you have done in the country in which you reside. And that's why I think it's important with this new Common Reporting Standard. And it will. This has got baby teeth at the moment. And although it's effective, it's proving a little difficult to get off the ground in some cases. But take my word for it, as with the European Union Savings Tax Directive some years ago, it's in its infancy, but it's going to grow and mature, and it will grow fast. And as a consequence, the idea of having secrecy over your financial affairs is history, and you need to make sure that you do have all your assets set up properly, effectively, to avoid tax legitimately rather than non-disclosure and omissions. And sitting down and talking to an advisor will put you in a position of understanding what the risks are and how to avoid them.
And how can people get in touch with Blevins Franks, Will?
Yeah, I think the best thing is to go to the website. Clearly, the business of Blevins Franks has offices scattered around the whole of continental Europe. There's inevitably going to be an office somewhere close to where you live. And if you contact that office and tell them what your concerns are, they would be very happy to provide you with information, perhaps to arrange a meeting. But for sure, it will be a worthwhile exercise. It's rare that a new inquiry comes to us where we are not in a position to save them significant amounts of tax compared to the position they're in when they arrive. So always worth talking about these things to make sure that you have got it correct and you don't slip up just by omission, if you like. So give the website a look, and then if you find the contact number of the office nearest to you, give them a call. They'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Interesting as always. We'll talk at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Have a great week.